Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Oh, yes. Hey there. I am Carol Jurgensen-Sheath, and I am here as your own personal life coach and mental health therapist. If you have a sexual addiction, or if you're the partner of a sex addict, this is the place that you can find out all the information, everything you need to really figure out how to work with this problem and lead a normal life. And tonight I have Jen Cole on, and she has Jennifer Cole Coaching, and she is an amazing woman who is going to talk about polygraph tests tonight. You know, so many addicts and partners alike want to know, are polygraph tests reliable? How do I go about getting one? You know, partners say, what if he can beat the polygraph test? Had a couple in today. And as I was saying, you know, tell me a little bit about the addict. Tell me what's going on. And she said, well, he's really seemingly working a recovery program, but I'm having trouble trusting him. I'm getting tired of looking at his phone. I'm getting tired of getting on the internet and checking it. And getting up in the middle of the night and seeing if he's awake. She says, it's exhausting, and I've been going to Essanon, which, of course, is a 12-step program for partners of addicts. And she said, I just want to stop being so hypervigilant. I want to help focus on me. And I said, hey, if you want to stop focusing on you, I might have an alternative to all that hypervigilance, all that checking. And then I told her in front of the addict that I was a proponent of polygraph tests here in Indianapolis, that every 3 to 4 months when somebody's in early recovery, a polygraph test can be extremely essential in evaluating a situation, in learning how to trust the addict. It helps the addict to absolutely be accountable. You know, if there's any part of the addict that says, ooh, she's not around, maybe I can chat with that escort, they think, but I'm going to get a polygraph test, and I don't want to ruin our relationship, and I will get busted, and so I really want to do right. So that polygraph test is oftentimes essential in setting up that trust, because it's one more tool to help a couple to feel safe and secure in the recovery of the addict. So we're going to be talking about that here in about 9:15. And in the meantime, I had an interesting email from somebody who has contacted me in the past. And we will call him Joe. Joe wrote me and said, hey, Carol, I wrote to you in the past about my cashmere fetish and sexual addiction. Joe would really like for me to have an expert on fetishes, and I'm going to do my best to find him an expert. He said, I saw a therapist in Chicago for FSAP therapy, and many of you have heard the show that I did with Robert Miller, who is a proponent of FSAP therapy. It is a specific therapy / EMDR that works with the connecting feeling or feelings of a fetish or of any addiction. And so he worked with somebody in Chicago, and it definitely helped me, he says, although I'm not sure exactly how much. I would do it again, though. He says, I'm writing to you now with a very different question. I've been in recovery since last October. I'm in therapy, group therapy, and Sex Addicts Anonymous. He does see a certified sexual addictions therapist. My wife is asking me to provide her with a written treatment plan, including a sexual health plan. I don't know what this entails or what the various pieces of these plans might be. Can you point me to any information or references on what this can include? I know they would be tailored to a person's needs. I'm looking for an outline that helps me understand what a plan would potentially include. Thanks so much, Carol. And then he said, again, thank you for your podcast. I really, really enjoy them. So here's the deal. A sexual health plan can be found in Facing the Shadows. And sexual health plans are customized to your own individual needs. You know, oftentimes when somebody's in early recovery, a sexual health plan would include no masturbation because, of course, that lights up the brain. And that may be forever, or that may be for 90 days, or that may be for a year. In some regards, it depends on the person. I, as a certified sexual addictions therapist, ask my clients not to masturbate for a year because what we want to do is calm down the brain. Now, masturbation, as well as any sexually addictive behavior, when you say a year, that's scary. That's why we say do it just one day at a time. But a sexual health plan would include masturbation. It would include healthy sexuality. You know, for some couples, we need to put into place a contract where they don't have sex. Maybe for a period of 30 days, 60 days, or even 90 days. So again, the addict who may associate sex with pornographic images that, again, light up the brain, can calm the brain down. I know if you're a partner listening to this show, you're going, you know, there's a part of me that really is resentful that we can't have sex because it's going to take him to the wrong place in his mind. But we have to really look at the reality of this. This is a brain dysfunction at this point. When you have an addiction, it's not something that the addict can work on by his or herself. It requires a whole host of tools put together to make it as easy as possible to retrain the brain and develop new neural pathways in the brain. So, again, a sexual health plan may include abstinence, and in that Facing the Shadows, there's also a contract for sexual activity. And then again, it may require that the person has open-eye sex. You know, for sex addicts, part of the addiction is always wondering what else is out there. You know, what can I see that I haven't seen before? So when an addict is in recovery, we want the addict to be very present in his relationship with the partner. And open-eye sex is absolutely the most intimate type of sex you can have. When a partner and a sex addict keep their eyes open and really focus on the person that they're with, they are much more likely to pay attention to the needs of that partner and less likely to fantasize about experiences, about images they've seen before. So open-eye sex might be a type of sexuality that you will want to provide and perform. Also, I'm a big proponent of keeping the lights on. Now, I know there are a lot of people that are actually inhibited by sex. And by that, I mean that they really would prefer low lighting or no lighting because they don't want each other to see each other's bodies, to explore being with each other. But open-eye sex and having the lights on will help you to stay focused on each other. So part of that sexual health plan may be that you have sex with as many lights on as possible so that you stay present with your partner again. And it may include initially just holding the other person, finding out what parts of the body actually are the most sensitized to being touched. You may for a while not want to have sex. You may just want to work on spooning and cuddling and holding. For some people, they don't participate in kissing. And if you're that kind of person, you may want to look in Facing the Shadows. It talks about the 10 stages of courtship. And that may involve spending time flirting and noticing your partner and being aware of the color of their eyes and communicating with them. You know, a healthy sexual plan also includes all the foreplay that occurs outside of the bedroom. You know, are you doing some daily check-ins? Are you having fun together? How about if you just take a bath together and you put sex on the back burner or a shower? I recommend a book by Bill and Ginger Burkaw. And that book is on how to have sexual relationships without going right into the sexual activity. And I'm going to look up that book. I think it's called In the Bedroom. Let me just see what I can find out here as we talk. Because we've had them on the show. You can listen to these podcasts. They are amazing coaches and therapists that have devoted their life to helping couples restore their sexual relationship. And so you can search by putting in Bill and Ginger Burkaw in past and previous podcasts and listen to them. I've interviewed them at least twice. It's really, I think, an area that takes people a while to redevelop because, you know, if you're a partner, you may not trust the addict and you may not be ready for sex. I know that this woman that I talked to today, she said, you know, how much sex should we be having? And I said, how much sex do you want? And she said, well, I'd like to have sex with him a couple of times a week. As a matter of fact, that's what we are having. And I said, you know what? That's absolutely perfect. And why I said that is because for right now, it may be up to the partner to actually begin to reinstate what she or he wants from the sexual relationship. Okay, so I'm looking at some blogs from Bill and Ginger Burkaw, and that is B-E-R-C-A-W. And let's see here. I'm going to look for books because they are amazing. Okay, here's the books. From the Living Room to the Bedroom and The Couple's Guide to Intimacy. Boy, that's the one I really recommend for starters. And there will be lots of hints about a sexual health plan. So he's looking for, Joe is looking for an outline that helps him understand what a plan would potentially include. And it sounds like his wife wants some assurance that she's not going to be objectified and he's not going to fantasize. So, Joe, I hope that was helpful. I hope you'll get the books. Again, that's Facing the Shadows, the workbook to Out of the Shadows. It has several chapters on sexual health. And again, we have The Couple's Guide to Intimacy and From the Living Room to the Bedroom by Bill and Ginger Burkaw. So there you have it. That's what healthy sexuality is all about. And I appreciate the fact that you are being diligent about providing your wife with what she needs to feel safe, because that is so important. And I don't mean to be just talking to the men as if they're sex addicts, because I have quite a few female sex addicts too. And they're having the same problems with their husbands and their partners. So you're not alone in this. And, you know, I say it takes an entire committee to help you with your recovery tools. So find a certified sexual addictions therapist, a coach perhaps, like Jen Cole, who's a personal restoration and life coach. She works with men and women. And, you know, what we know is that if we don't know, we'll figure it out. We have a listserv of people that can really help us when we need guidance ourselves. So if you think you're lost, sometimes we're lost with you, and we do everything we can to get you the right information. So I so appreciate the email, and, you know, I tried to get him on the show, but like so many others, this is such a scary thing to talk about that oftentimes people really would prefer to send emails because they know it's more anonymous. And, of course, I changed this man's name and made him Joe. So I want to welcome tonight Jennifer Cole. Jen Cole is a coach, and as I said before, her passion is about empowering women who feel hurt, confused, or helpless in any of their relationships. They've been betrayed. They want to heal, feel loved and appreciated, and so Jen is able to help them, and her website is really excellent in terms of helping the partner, and she works with men too. So, Jen Cole, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Carol. I appreciate the opportunity to join you and all your listeners tonight. This is amazing, and everything you do is incredible, so thank you.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I know there were several topics we could talk about tonight, but you've picked something that is near and dear to the hearts of the women that you work with, and it has to do with polygraph tests. And so I said, yes, let's talk about a guide in regard to that, because it can feel very daunting when you want to have a polygraph test administered and you don't know how to go about it, how to pick the right people, how much it costs, all those things. So tell me, you know, the women that you work with, you are actually out of what state here in the... Oh, you're in Canada, are you not?
I am. I absolutely am. I'm in no state.
you're not
I'm in
the
Ontario.
United States.
That's right.
Right. So tell me, what types of questions do the partners of sex addicts typically ask you about polygraph tests?
Oh, well, thank you for that. It's a big question, and if I could just back up for 1 second, Carol, and just put it out there as well that what makes me qualified to speak on this is not that I'm actually a polygrapher myself, but I've worked with several, and I have been through it with my husband, who is a recovering sex addict and has been successfully in recovery for over 5 years now. So when I say this, it's because he failed and passed some tests, and as a professional, I've also worked with several. And so I just wanted to put it out there. So I've kind of been through the ringer with this stuff personally, and then professionally I go through it with my clients as well, because this is just one tool of many. And I think that kind of speaks to what you said earlier in the introduction, just about this whole, well, I call it a care team, but when you were speaking about a group of people that can come together to help us heal in whatever it is that we're after, I think the polygrapher could be one such member of that team. And so there's lots of questions that our clients will ask us, and it's predominantly around how much it costs. Can they fail? Or can they pass even when they're lying? Is it foolproof? How many questions can I ask? What kinds of questions can I ask? And I think a lot of the questions tend to revolve around emotion. Just what were you feeling when you did this? That type of stuff. So does that answer your question?
100%.
Okay.
I love the fact that you're sharing that this was your own personal journey, and part of your coaching had to do with coaching people on how to create that committee and that reliability that you need, mm-hmm. so that you don't get betrayed again by another member of the team, that you actually have as much information as possible.
That's right. We call it trust, but verify.
Absolutely. So now let me ask you, do you believe the polygraph tests are reliable?
I do. I wouldn't recommend them if I didn't. So I say this wholeheartedly, Carol. Honestly, I know there are a lot of naysayers out there. I've had people post on my Facebook page or my website about their unreliability. But, you know, again, I can speak to this from a personal standpoint, but I will also say this as a registered nurse here in Ontario. And I've got my bachelor's degree in that, and a lot of research goes in behind that. And I've done my own fair share of research, and not my own personal studies, but a literature review of many studies out there about the reliability of the exam. And I say yes. I absolutely say yes, they are reliable.
Well, and, you know, I have them administered too, and I have never doubted the reliability of a test. And there have only been two people that flunked it, and both times intuitively I knew that they weren't being honest, and so when they went into it I thought, gosh, I hope I'm wrong, and those were the only two that ever didn't pass it. And so, you know, you hear myths like, well, if you put a penny in your shoe, that will foil the polygraph test, or if you take a Xanax or a tranquilizer, you can get past a good polygrapher, and that just is not my experience.
No, mine either. And so, first of all, I'm sorry that you've even had to experience, well, I'm sorry, I guess, as they say. I'm sorry that you had to experience people that wouldn't have passed. I'm grateful for the fact that your intuition was intact, because I think that's the biggest tool that any of us have, to be quite honest. But the biggest gift I was given, and why I feel so passionately about this, is because my husband actually failed. I never thought I would say that. but one of the biggest gifts that he and I were ever given was that he actually failed. And this was after what he thought was full disclosure and rehab, because he was still hiding one more thing, and it came out.
And did he have a conscious awareness that he was hiding that?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt, but I just want to make that clear. Conscious awareness, absolutely. Are there things that these guys, and I say these guys, excuse me, just sexual addicts in general, but I work mostly with women, so please forgive me. But are there things that people will forget and then remember later? Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Because if they're acting out with that pronounced, they might not remember details, but I will throw it out there, Carol. You'll remember if you slept with a prostitute or not. That kind of thing. So sorry to be graphic, but that's the kind of stuff that we're dealing with here when we're talking about polygraphs. So
okay,
I think the greatest gift that you and I have been, sorry, go ahead.
So your husband failed, and you were able to look at that as a gift because...
Well, that. Not right away.
Okay.
Absolutely not right away. That's a story for another time, but later on, absolutely, because it just showed me the validity of the actual test, not because he learned how to then later pass it. It was because he learned how to tell the truth.
Well, yes.
And
you know,
it got verified.
It gets verified, and what we know about addiction is you're only as sick as the secret you keep. So that was one secret that would have interfered in his sobriety later on.
Yeah, that he admitted. So you talk about that whole conscious awareness thing. He admitted that he thought he had disclosed it. Now, let me back up. He knew he was gaming it, but he thought he could get away with the disclosure because it was kind of couched within some other acting out behavior. But because this particular behavior stood out so much on its own, that's how sensitive these tests are. So I want your listeners to understand those naysayers out there that feel like these guys can pass even though they're lying. My husband thought he could. Thought he was like, oh, I'm good on this one. She doesn't need to know this detail. And he got caught.
So that
so I say
is
that
reassurance.
From a personal perspective. Yeah, I'm speaking from a personal perspective so people can hear my passion, but I've heard similar stories from many of my clients. Not that their husbands often fail because they get to the point where their husbands are telling the truth and the polygraph is really intended to not catch them in a lie, but to catch them in the truth, that we finally know what's happening once and for all. But I do have other clients that have experienced the same thing.
Okay, and so I had said earlier before you came on that, you know, truly it is a way to establish trust and accountability. And
yes.
I'm a believer that sex addicts need 10 tools to work religiously to make their recovery possible. And one of those tools are filters for your phone and for laptops.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that artificial, okay, what can we do externally to get some help? A polygraph test is another thing that can actually kind of relieve a partner who's feeling like they have to check 24/7 to make sure.
Oh, yes.
Their sex addicts is telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. So when I hear from a lot of my clients and women in my groups about the frustration that they're experiencing with having to check up 24/7, I mean, I can't even begin to explain the agony for someone that hasn't gone through this as to what that tension is like, wondering all the time what's next. So the polygraph, as you said, is one tool in the toolbox where partners can just kind of go, you know what? He may be acting out right now. I hope he's not, but I'm going to park it and move on with my life until the next polygraph. And then I'll find out. And then I know what I'm going to do. And then she can go on with her life and have the liberation and the freedom of just being able to move on.
Absolutely. Now, how many questions do the polygraphers that you use allow the partners to create?
Oh, that is such a good question because I know our ladies usually want to ask a million questions, and I did too. And I honestly, Carol, have worked with two particular polygraphers, and I'll use them as examples because one uses three, the other uses up to eight. So
wow.
Go figure. Yeah, they use two different computer programs. Both are computerized. I have researched them both, and so I believe in their reliability and validity, but they take a slightly different approach. Now, I will disclose that one is in Canada, the one that uses three. And the one that uses up to 8 questions is in the U.S. So I don't know the extent of their certification or how that plays into it, or their background for that matter. But it really just comes down to the intensity of the questions, the similarity of the questions. So what I mean by that is any polygrapher I work with, because I've worked with a few, will also coach me to coach my client that they have to be along the same line. So the one that will allow you to do 8, for example, will be a little broader in the addiction. And you and I know that the addiction doesn't necessarily just speak to the physical acting out, to other lives, financial, spiritual, physical, a whole bunch of different things. And he will allow different questions around the addiction, including finances. My other polygrapher, who might only allow 3, wants it tighter. He wants a little more specificity around exactly what it is that you're after. And he states that it's because it'll keep the test that much more conclusive. So this is where I work with the partner, and it's what she's after. And that's how, in part how we choose which polygrapher we work with. It's in part the questions that she needs to ask. And ultimately, it's what she's after emotionally by the end of the exam. So I will always ask her, what is it that you're after in a feeling word by the time this test is done? And that's what we go after, regardless of the number of questions.
Well, that absolutely makes sense. Now, it's interesting because I use a polygrapher that I really trust, and he allows for 5. And he, too, wants me to help the partner come up with the questions, because oftentimes a partner won't know what types of questions to ask or how to ask them. For instance, one of the typical questions is, do you fantasize about women? And, of course, my polygrapher says, all men fantasize about women, so that's not a good question.
And it's not, no, can't have it. I know, I agree.
And so let me ask you, because I know that the cost of a polygrapher can range from $250 up to $1,200. For the two polygraphers that you work with, how much do they tend to cost?
On average, around $400, and that's both U.S. and Canadian dollars, which $400 Canadian in U.S. dollars right now is probably more like $1 million, but they charge about the same amount. And the one I use in the U.S. under certain circumstances will travel to you, but of course you would have to incur those costs, and he's been willing to come to Toronto. And I've gathered a group of women and their spouses who have used his services within a 2-day period. So we've worked together to set that up. And then the other gentleman that I've used, who actually lives in Ontario, he will also drive to meet you probably within, 3-hour radius of where he lives, which doesn't cover too far compared to what your listeners is, where your listeners are. So that would be an added cost, but the price of the exam itself is usually around $400.
Okay.
And what I say, I have a lot of women, sorry, Carol, I just want to add in there. I have a lot of women who say, well, I can't afford it. Or he says we can't afford it.
Right.
I don't want to be obnoxious here, but I will, I guess, and say, what is your sanity worth? That's my biggest question. And then secondly is, how much does it cost to get divorced? Because to me, from everything that I know, $400 is a drop in the bucket. It's worth it.
Oh, 100%. I have a caller on the line, and I must tell you, Jennifer, usually I don't take calls, because sometimes, being that we're talking about sex, I can get prank calls. Do you want to see if this
yes.
is somebody with a very legitimate question?
I absolutely do, and I get those calls too, Carol, so you and I can handle it like a team.
Okay, here we go. This is Carol the Coach and Jen Cole, and we are here to take your question. What question do you have for us? Are you there on the line? Because I am holding for you your area code 702. Okay, we're having some connection problems. So, they were holding and holding and holding, so I'm afraid I probably left them hold too long. Now, can I ask you something else? Because obviously you are a life coach and you're into restoring relationships. And for my listening audience that may not know, coaching can occur via phone, via Skype, via Zoom, or face-to-face. So if somebody is listening to this show right now and they think, I'd like to work with her. She's been there. She knows how I feel. I need some guidance. How can they get a hold of you?
Oh, thank you, Carol. Absolutely, you are bang on. That's the beauty of coaching, is it can happen through technology as we know it today. So as you've heard already, I'm in Canada, so I always let people be aware that you can text me, but it could cost you, or call me at 613-888-3600. But it might be easier to get a hold of me at jennifer@dawningheart.com and just email me that way, and then we can set something up.
And so how long have you been doing your coaching?
I've been doing it for many years, but specifically regarding partners of sex addicts, I've been doing it and have been trained in it for over 4.
Wow. And you and I have a real commonality in that we were both trained at the same coaching facility. And I think it's one of the best in the country.
It is.
Especially because
best.
It helps you deal with the psychological issues behind somebody's needs. And, you know, when I started my coaching practice, we were told that really we needed to take people and help them actualize their potential, and that we really shouldn't do mental health. And then one day I was talking to the founder of our coaching school, and he said, you know, you need a very specialized niche. And we are finding that coaches do a great job when they specialize in such an exclusive niche. They're oftentimes better than mental health therapists because they really explore and expand with their clients to get them all the help they need. So obviously you're dealing with a lot of people that want to restore their relationships and heal from their wounds.
Absolutely.
And so how many people do you work with? Do you work with them in groups, as individuals, couples? I know you work with men and women. Tell us a little bit about your practice.
Well, thanks, Carol. I appreciate that opportunity because I hope that your listeners want to hear that there's help no matter their situation. So one of my biggest feelings, if you will, that's ever come out of my own personal recovery in being the partner of a sexual addict, as well as a coach, is the ability for us to find peace no matter our circumstances. And I think that speaks a lot to what you just said about the process that coaches go through, and that our particular school has allowed us and trained us, in addition to my nursing capabilities, to dive a little bit further into the psychological world. I will never pretend to or acknowledge being any sort of therapist or psychologist. I refer out to my colleagues, and I have lots of colleagues that I can do that with. But there is a lot of goal-oriented and just sort of that deep-seated block stuff that we can work through in groups, which I do. I do it one-on-one. I don't do couples per se. What I will do is allow the couple to come on the phone or meet me in order for him, again, the addict, I just use that sort of general neutral term or that gender neutral term. And we talk about the trauma side of sexual addiction and what that does to a partner. I will do sort of an educational component, but beyond that, I don't do couples. But like I said, groups, individuals, on the phone, in person, you name it. It's whatever we can do to help people feel less isolated, supported, not crazy, because sometimes we're made to feel crazy through this whole thing, and just know that there's hope.
And so how do you work with men, since you aren't working with couples per se? What kind of men seek help for your services?
I've actually worked with men who are partners because their female spouse is the addict, and they have found out that there's been infidelity, cheating in their marriage. And so I've worked with them to help them I don't necessarily help them to restore the marriage unless that's what they want, but I help them focus on themselves and what it is that they need. So men, women, doesn't matter. It's how do I show up in this relationship? What are my boundaries? What's my self-care? What is it that I need to do? But yeah, men show up to me the same way as women. I think we all hurt the same way. Just what it is that we need and how we communicate might be a little bit different. And so I honor that as well. But really, Carol, what it comes down to is the individual. And I just meet them where they're at. And we just go from there.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so in your work with partners of sex addicts, when somebody fails their test, how do you help the partner cope with that? What kind of advice do you give the partner?
Yeah, well, actually, a lot of that, first of all, I don't really give advice per se, but I do consult, just to clarify. Okay, let me back up. I will actually help someone figure out what they need to do if they really don't. But coaching, as you well know, is really around helping that person pull out their own expertise, their own wills, their own desires. And so prior to the exam, the polygraph, I will actually have worked with the partner to figure out all the what ifs. And a lot of the work that I do is around fears. And so leading up to the polygraph exam, I will have already done an extensive amount of work around what are we afraid of, you know, what will happen if that happens, why are you afraid of that, and we just figure it out from there so that she's already set up not only with what she's been afraid of, but also her self-care plan and her boundaries around a failed polygraph exam. So I will be there to help her through that, because regardless of preparation, it's devastating. I won't pretend that it's not, because we go into these things hoping that they'll pass. But in the odd chance that they actually fail, I'm there for her either physically or right there on the phone as support. But typically she's already so well prepared that she's got this. And we know what we're going to do the second she walks out that door or gets the call that he failed.
Well, you know, that's excellent, because truly one of the things that impresses me about your coaching is that you help women to feel centered and focused and to have an action plan regardless of the addict. You know, that's such an important part of partnership, is that your life does not totally hinge on what the addict is doing or not doing. You have your own sense of self. And that's how you restore for these people their sense of sanity and serenity. Is that not correct?
Oh, it is, Carol. Thank you for bringing that up, because to me, it's about interdependence. And so sort of what that means for our listeners is it's somewhere in the middle. So on one end of the spectrum, you have codependence, which I think people are becoming more familiar with that term. It's more of being addicted to the addict kind of thing, and I'll only be okay if you're okay type of thinking. And then on the other end, we have total independence, where I don't need you. And it's like, okay, well, why are you married then? So somewhere in the middle is interdependence. And how I define that is I don't need you, but I want you. It's choice-based, not fear-based. And I think that's what we're after here.
100%. And clearly, you're one of the few coaches that I've heard talk about interdependence, because I, too, want my clients to become interdependent. And that way, they aren't their self-esteem is not dependent on their partner. Mm-hmm. And yet, they're not a rock just out by themselves. They're really working together to make a relationship or decide what they need to do next. You know, we just talked about what would happen if an addict failed a polygraph. And I don't know about you, but for me, that rarely happens, because just by virtue of that polygraph test, it helps an addict to be more truthful and honest, not only with her, but for himself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a real big believer in Patrick Carn's model that says the very first recovery task that you need to work with an addict on is breaking through their denial. And you've cited your husband's own experience where he did know he was holding on to a secret. And I really believe in 99.9% of all cases, they do. I have had one specific case that had to do with a polygraph test where the woman had said, is there any acting out behaviors that I don't know about? And he answered no, and he passed it. And about 5 months later, she started talking about his exhibitionism. And he was sitting there talking with her, and he goes, oh, my gosh, there is another situation I've never shared with you. And she came, and then he shared that he had exposed himself to a clerk at a gas station. And that had been, and it happened before they got married. And she said, you know, Carol, how often might this happen, that something does come into his conscious that because he the whole time said, I had not remembered that until you started really asking me specific questions. So I went back to my polygrapher, and he said, you know what, that is so rare, but I do believe on occasion somebody can lock something in their unconscious until they're ready to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've probably had 1,000 polygraph tests administered. I've only run into that once. But there is a little bit of variability that can happen. It's not 100% accurate, but it's 99.999% accurate.
Well, it's one tool, right? The second you reach into your toolbox and you go to reach for that particular screwdriver, for that screw that you're trying to tighten in the wall, you might not grab the correct one the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've done that, right? And I'm not trying to be whatever about this test, but it's just one tool. It's not the end-all be-all. And people have to know that. It is one tool in the trust-building process for a restored relationship post-disclosure or discovery of sex addiction. That's what this is about.
So, Jen, you obviously have made it your mission to work with partners. Do you have any specific certification or training to work with partners?
Besides
life
experience. I have life experience, which, to be quite honest, my clients have never asked me about my credentials. They usually just say, oh, I've heard you've been through this and survived. Can you help me? Right. But in all seriousness, I've obviously got my degree in nursing from Queen's University, which is one of the top schools in all of Canada. I have IPEC, which is the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching, for my coaching certification. I am training under Dr. Douglas Weiss for ASATS, which is the American Association for Sex Addiction Therapists, and I will be trained through him as a coach. But I also have my APSATS training, which is for trauma, and it's specifically for partners. So that's where my heart is, because when I first encountered therapists through my own personal journey, very quickly they were trying to tell me that I was codependent, that somehow I deserved this, that I brought it on, that I must have known, all of those types of things. And that couldn't be further from the truth. My husband will admit to all of you right now, if he were here, the second, that he was the best at deceit. And for 15 years, I had no idea. I thought he was the best man on the planet. So I know that there's a trauma model out there, and that's why I chose to get trained through that. And that's really where my heart lies, Carol. It's really with that.
Well, and you know, I'm also in training. I've been trained, and now I'm in certification with APSATS too. And I really am excited about this program. I mean, we've done some training together, have we not?
Yes. This is incredible for us as personal, like sort of our own professions, but for just the whole industry, for all of our partners, for our clients, Carol, this is amazing, and I'm so glad that you're in on it.
Well, I am too, and I got to tell you, what you just described there was professional betrayal, and it's that secondary type of betrayal that happens. Not only are you betrayed by your loved one, but then if you're with a professional that doesn't understand and they want to call you a co-addict, or they want to make your codependency the reason that this person acted out, it is a second betrayal that makes you again start doubting yourself. And so really APSATS is around to explain that trauma model and to right the wrong of what some professionals do because they don't know any better.
Yes, and that's true. So that's a great point, if I can just jump in there and say that the best of therapists sometimes really, truly, they don't intend to do harm. They really do have your best interest at heart. But because they haven't been trained in something so specific, like sexual addiction, and there really is almost like no addiction like this one, they don't know better, and they can unintentionally do harm. And we don't want that. So if anyone's been harmed, you know, we want to try to pick up the pieces, help you put it back together, and acknowledge what you've been through. I know, Carol, it almost makes me laugh to this day. It's not funny, but it almost was, that immediately following my husband's first major disclosure or discovery, I should say, we went to speak a couples counselor, and he seriously looked at me after the trauma I was trying to express to him without using the trauma word. He looked at me and he said, "Oh, I think you need to garden more."
And so what did you
we never went
to,
back to
that
him?
Therapist? That makes sense.
I don't think I remember looking at my husband, but I don't ever remember what I actually said to him. I probably just BS'd my way through the rest of the conversation because I'm a polite Canadian and I'm a professional in the community and whatever, and then we never went back. But that's the kind of stuff. So it doesn't even have to be a blatant betrayal or, you know, therapy-induced trauma, but it can be something as subtle as telling you to go off and do something as simple as, oh, just go garden. That will make your trauma all better. It's like, no, you need people that not only understand it, but know how to guide you through it.
Well, and truly, it reminds me of sometimes some pastoral counselors or therapists that say, maybe you need to work on your sex life. and jazz it up a little bit better so that he won't go other places. And that couldn't be further from the truth either. So we're telling all of our partners out there that intuitively you know when somebody's minimizing or misdirecting you. And anybody who really wants somebody who's skilled in treating the partner, go to APSATS, which is capital A, capital P, capital S-A-T-S. And they are trained professionals. Obviously, Barbara Steffens is the founder of that group, and she helped with Marsha Means to write the book, My Sexually Addicted Spouse. And she's made it her mission to train therapists. And we have been trained in 30 hours of certification and supervision hours before we get the degree that we're looking for, this is a certification degree. So I just can't highly, I mean, I feel so blessed to be a pioneer in this field. You know, we both are.
I do too. Yes, I know. And that's part of, I shouldn't say part, honestly, Carol, that's my heart in all of this, that yes, I'm a coach by profession, and by profession, I do make money at what I do. I get paid for what I do. But my heart is truly in creating awareness for partners who have been through it, that they're not alone and they don't have to suffer in isolation, but also awareness for what seems to be the general population. And as things like the Ashley Madison scandal that came out last summer or other things that seem so shocking to people, probably to you and I were like, yeah, that's been happening for a long time. we need to just let people know that this is much more prevalent than they either care to admit or actually know is going on. But if they do find out it's happening, we can help. There is help out there. It is not the shame and the grieving that they have to do by themselves.
Yes, absolutely. They're pioneers too, because although sexual addiction has been around forever and ever, truly treatment for sexual addiction has not. And so, you know, they're finding out, okay, what tools can I employ? What books are available? And how can I work with someone? So one more time, Jen, anybody who would like to work with you could do so by getting a hold of you through email. And your email address is?
Jennifer, with two N's, at dawningheart.com. And my phone number is 613-888-3600.
Okay. And then if they contact you, what will more than likely happen is that they will be able to set up an appointment. And is that primarily by phone, or do you do some sort of video?
It tends to be more by phone. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it tends to be more by phone all over North America. A lot of my clients actually like it, because as some of them say, they get to do the ugly cry with me and not worry about what they look like. I laugh because I've done it, so I get it. They get to do the pajama thing and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of fun when we get to bond just like teenage girls over the phone once again. But I'm open to whatever it is they need, because like I said earlier, that's my heart, is just to provide and fill that gap of help that might not be in their area, and to be that support that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Absolutely. And so what is the normal length of appointment by phone if they want to work with you?
Well, the first call that we usually have, of course, it doesn't cost anything. It's just for them to get to know me, ask questions, that sort of thing. And that lasts about 30 to 45 minutes. And then all of our other calls or sessions together are probably an hour. If I have more time, we go over, and I'm generous with my time that way, but usually about an hour. And I allow for texting and email support in between, because as you can imagine, and you've experienced, Carol, I'm sure, that the disclosures, the fights, the triggers, the upsets, don't wait for our next session with our clients. And so I allow for 24/7 texting and email support so they can get a hold of me and just get some help.
Yes, it sounds like you're a great value for the money. And so you can find out how much Jen charges. And obviously that first session is free, so you can make sure that it's a good fit. And is there anything else you would recommend for a partner who wants more information about polygraph tests and your services?
Absolutely. Obviously they can call me, and I have additional resources. I have specific questions that my polygraphers have said, here, get them to ask me this, that sort of thing, and we can work together to build that up. But, Carol, if I could just take one last minute to just lovingly warn our listeners to the parking lot disclosure. So you know
Please
what I mean
do.
By that?
Absolutely. Tell them about that.
I know. So I think we'd be remiss if we didn't warn our listeners around what that means. And I'm not trying to make light of this, but it is coined that way for a reason, and it is literally because as men are pulling up to the polygraph, they will actually give parking lot disclosures. So where our women think that they've got it all and they've pinned their guys down and they've asked 50 times, are you sure this is all? Are you sure this is it? As they're going into the exam, miraculously, all of a sudden, as they're literally pulling into the parking lot, something else will happen. Something else will come out, okay? So that is something that I just want to warn our listeners about, because we can work together to prepare you for that type of disclosure. So like I said earlier, just like if they failed, we will work with you to make sure that you are well supported, that you've got lots of self-care, that you know what you're going to do if that happens, so that as much as you still may be taken off guard, you're not completely surprised. And I just can't stress enough that you need to have boundaries around the, oh, I just have one more thing to tell you type of thing, because you also want a professional involved with that to help you through it. And it is not fair for them to just kind of unload this on you at the last minute as you're about to go into this very pivotal point in your relationship. So I'm off my soapbox now, Carol. I'm sorry, but that's a huge deal that people need to be aware of.
Well, and in my situation, I always have them do the disclosure no more than 2 days before the polygraph, and that is part of the disclosure. And for some of you that have already had disclosures but you've never used polygraphs, I use a polygraph to make sure that the person has shared everything possible. And although it may not be parking lot, it might be the disclosure happened at 2 and at 9 o'clock the addict is calling saying, hey, there is one more thing that I didn't share with you and I want to get that out before tomorrow's test. So you're right. Mm-hmm. Having a professional, somebody who has expertise in polygraph tests like Jen, is absolutely essential, so that not only can she help prepare you, but she's also available if something comes up that you weren't anticipating as a partner.
Absolutely, Carol. Thank you for that. And for you as well, thank you for all the work that you're doing and have done with partners, because I don't think there's enough of us out there. So I am so blessed to have met you.
Oh, thank you, Jen, and that's what I think about you, too. And, again, it's always fun to work with somebody who has been in the same training programs, because we really get that we have been trained appropriately. And that's what we want for the people that we work with. We want people that have good expertise. So thank you so much for volunteering to come on tonight. As we end, one more time, your website is?
It's www.polygraphtest.com. dawningheart.com. Or I've also got a general life coaching website, which is www.jennifercole.coach.
And I got to tell you, because I got on her website, you have to capitalize J and for Jennifer, C for Cole, and then C for Coach. That is the best way to get to that website, too. So,
thank you.
Jen, I wish you the best of luck. You sound amazing. I'll be sending people to you. I hope that our listeners will take advantage of that free call and see if they feel like you're the right fit. I can't imagine
them
wanting anything else.
Well, and likewise, Carol, I mean, we're in this together, right? We're all, whoever's listening, and you and I, we're in this together. We want to restore hearts. We want to restore peace. We want to restore marriages. So this is why we're doing this. And it was my absolute pleasure. You hardly had to ask me, like, at all. I was right on it today to just say, let's talk, because that's where my heart is. So thank you so much for all that you do and for this opportunity.
All right, Jen, you take care and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that, again, was Jennifer Cole, and she has so much expertise in not just coaching but in partner trauma. And, you know, there aren't enough services for partners, so I really encourage you to check out her website. And as you can see, she's very passionate about the work she does. That's us coaches in general. But Jen screams passion. So, you know, guys, it is an honor to be with you. And I just really appreciate the time you spend with me. What I know to be true is you don't listen on Monday night very often. But what you do is you download the show and open it up during the week. And I get lots of emails from you. So I look forward to seeing you next week. We're going to be talking with Rihanna Beauregard, and she does sex therapy online. So for Joe, who was asking about a sexual health plan, he might want to listen to the show next week. All right, as I say at the end of every show, you know, there will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. And I look forward to many more shows and helping with sex help with Carol the Coach. Have a great night.